Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, May 24th, 2012. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. But this week, does racking your beer into a secondary fermenter make a difference in your brew? Chris Colby, editor of Brew Your Own magazine, and I take a look at the results of the latest BYO-BBR collaborative experiment. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. In our 2012 Brewers Logbooks, we'll help you track and log 50 batches of beer. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. We have a show page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, think of us and click on our associate link first. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own magazine and the American Home Brewers Association on our site, too. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone and Android podcast apps on their respective stores. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory now, too, and we're on the Stitcher app as well. We got a lot to cover today, but I do want to take a moment to brag on a Basic Brewing Radio alumnus. You may remember the October 20th episode from this past year when Ken Valley shared two spontaneously fermented homebrews with us. Now, these were the beers that Ken brewed similar to the traditional lambic style, making his own sort of cool ship and letting the beers ferment or be inoculated by the yeast that's floating in the air in his back porch. Very tasty beers, and we were just amazed at how they turned out. Anyway, Ken emailed me to say that he entered those beers into the Tasty Classic Homebrew Competition, and, no surprise, the Unblended Lambic took first in its category, and the Cherry version took fourth in that category. So the judges apparently agreed with us that Ken's beers were outstanding. So congratulations, Ken. And to top it all off, Ken says he made a cider using that simple technique that we used on Basic Brewing Video, simply pitching yeast into a jug of apple cider, basically. Well, that cider also won first in its category. So congratulations, Ken. Awesome. Nice work. Had to brag on Ken there, especially since, you know, those lambic beers, those spontaneous, quote-unquote, spontaneously fermented beers, were some of my favorite homebrews, I have to say. This is the last episode of Basic Brewing Radio that I'll post until after the National Homebrewers Conference in Seattle. We always take a few weeks off in the summer to go to the conference and to spend time with the family and such. And Steve and I do have plans to shoot an episode of Basic Brewing Video later this week, so be on the lookout for that. Okay, let's get to our experiment. Does racking from a primary fermenter into a secondary fermenter affect your beer? Well, Chris Colby, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hey, James. Thanks for having me on your show.
Secondary fermenters. Do we need them or do we not need them? That's essentially our experiment today, right?
Yes, that indeed is our experiment today.
Can you explain into a little more detail what the parameters were that we were looking at doing and asking people to do?
Yeah, in today's experiment, we asked people to split a batch of beer, a batch of wort, into two identical fermenters. Pitch both of them, let them ferment through most of what you normally call primary fermentation, and then of the two different batches or two different subsets, rack one to secondary and leave the other in primary, and leave them for the same amount of time, and then package them on one day. And the rationale behind this was that in the instructions for homebrewing have sort of evolved over the years, and sort of in the, I don't know, late 80s, early 90s, it was considered, the way to homebrew was that you made your beer, you made your wort, pitched your yeast, you know, fermented in you know, either a bucket or a carboy, and then after a week or so, racked to secondary to condition the beer. And a little later on, maybe in the late 90s, some people started saying, you know, hey, wait a minute, you can skip that step. You don't need to, you know, take the time and energy to clean a secondary fermenter. You don't need to worry about the risk of contamination from the transfer. You can simply just skip it. And so our experiment was designed to test whether or not racking the beer to secondary actually did anything, and whether what it did was a good thing or not.
In addition to the risk of contamination, there was also the risk of oxidizing the beer. I mean, if you're transferring from one container to the other, unless you purge that secondary fermenter with the CO2, you're going to be exposing your beer to a lot more oxygen.
Right. And the typical instructions for racking a secondary are to rack to a vessel where you have very little headspace.
Hmm.
So that minimizes that, because when you rack over, some of the CO2 is going to come out of solution right away just from the physical, you know, motion of the liquid, and should push out, you know, some oxygen from above it. And with a smaller headspace, that's one way to do it. Or as you say, if you can purge the vessel with CO2, that's another way. But even then, you are moving the beer into you know, from one place to another, and there's going to be a little bit of oxygen contact, just, you know, because you've got to open both vessels are going to be open to the air when you do that.
Right. So before this experiment, where were you? Which camp were you in?
I was, that's hard to say. There were some yeasts that I had felt from anecdotal evidence that racking it helped them clear. I used Y yeast 1056 a lot, or the White Labs equivalent is the WLP01, and then there's the dried yeast, the US05. Those are all supposed to be the same strain. I use that quite a bit, and I always felt that racking the secondary on that one helped a lot. But I used to use, and still do, Y yeast 1968 a lot. It's like the London ESB strain. And that flocks out really, really hard. And with that strain, I wouldn't rack. And then I eventually got a conical fermenter, so that sort of changed the dynamics there too. But yeah, I sort of played it by ear on whether to rack or not. And then, of course, there's laziness. it's possible that on occasion that crept into my brewing plans.
Yeah, I was in the don't rack to secondary camp, just leave it in primary. And what I would do was, you know, after a couple of weeks in the primary, with most of my beers, I would just bottle and have good results. Now, when I switched to kegging, or when I added kegging into the dynamic here at the house, it presented more interesting questions, because when I did my Belgians, like when I did this Belgian I did for this experiment with using a White Labs 500, which is a Belgian yeast, that stuff wants to stay up in solution for a very long time. And what I would do was I would get impatient and rack the beer to the keg, even though it was still cloudy, saying, it'll settle in the keg. Well, it did settle in the keg, and I wound up with, you know, my first few pints from that keg being just essentially yeast slurry. So what I wanted to learn out of this experiment is, does racking to the secondary give you any benefit? Does it help clarify the beer any more than just leaving it in there for an extended period of time? And the first beer that I did two batches of beers for this experiment. The first was a Belgian using the White Lab 500, and I sent you pictures, and I'm going to post a link to those, to that picture on our Facebook page and on our the episode description on basicbrewingradio.com. And I'll also put it as a PDF attachment on the iPhone and Android apps. But you can see from that series of photos, that montage that I sent you, Chris, that racking to the secondary does have a big impact on settling out yeast. What I did was I racked. I made a batch of beer. Out of the kettle, I racked it all into one fermenter. I stirred it up to make sure that the trub was evenly distributed, and then I racked from that half of it into a second identical fermenter, fermented, and then after 6 days, I racked one of those carboys to the secondary. And I was amazed. On the day that I racked, I started to see some activity in that secondary fermenter. And you can see in that picture that the first picture of that montage that I sent you, you can actually see some clearing happening. And that photo was taken just hours after I racked over. And then over a period of the next 17 days, the secondary, the one racked to secondary, became more clear and more clear and more clear. The one that stayed in the primary was clearing, but not nearly as quickly. And, you know, after 23 days being in the fermenters, the one that was in the primary was still milky looking, and the one that was racked to secondary was clear. And you can dramatically see that in those photos, can't you?
Yeah, the photos are incredibly clear and show that racking to secondary, at a minimum in the case of that yeast, absolutely does clear your beer.
Now, I did. I had time to do a pale ale after that with US05, and it was more difficult. I took some pictures, but it's really hard to tell what's going on because the beer is darker. And after 10 days, most of the yeast settled out anyway. But what I did was after 10 days, I racked one of those carboys to a secondary. And after 3 additional days, the one that I racked to the secondary was crystal clear. So I went ahead and bottled the samples that I had for tasting. Now, the one that was still in the primary was a bit cloudy, but it wasn't nearly as cloudy as the Belgian. The US05 flocculated out a lot better than the Belgian yeast did. But still, there was a difference. The one that was in the primary for 13 days was more cloudy than the one that was in primary for 10 and then racked for an additional 3. So again, with the US05, racking to the secondary did help clarify the beer. So we have a result.
Yay!
So what's going on? I mean, we did a taste test. I recorded a taste test with Steve Wilkes and Paul Morstad, and I'll play that here in just a minute. But before we move on to the sensory evaluation, just talking about what went on in the fermenters, what's going on? Do we know?
Well, from this experiment, we don't know, but there's one sort of, and I forget, was it you that suggested it or Steve? But someone suggested, and to me this sounds like a very reasonable hypothesis, that the clearing in the beer that's been racked might be due to sort of when you move the beer, you're going to dislodge some of the CO2. Some of the CO2 is going to come out of solution, and maybe some of that CO2 is buoying up yeast, and so when that leaves the solution, it makes the yeast flocculate more. That's a possibility, and then the sort of equivalent way of saying that is in the unracked beer, there's more CO2 in solution, and the yeast are, CO2 bubbles are attached to the yeast and keeping them buoyed up a little bit.
But that's just a theory. We don't know that for sure.
That's just a guess, right? But it's testable. One thing that we could try, and maybe I will at some point, brew, like, say, 15 gallons of beer, put it in 3 carboys, rack one to secondary, leave one alone, and in the third, don't rack it to secondary, but just swirl it around for, however long it takes to rack the one to secondary you know, while that's racking and filling, just sort of swirl the other carboy around for the equivalent amount of time. You know, you'll see the bubbling coming out of the airlock or whatever, and then let them sit and condition some more. If it's the agitation knocking the gas out of solution that's doing it, you should be able to do it either with racking or with just agitating the carboy.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear how that comes out. I did now on the pale ale, because I was talking to somebody at the homebrew shop, and they said, you know, I have a cylinder conical, you know, and I take a rubber mallet and I bang, to clarify the beer, I bang the side of the conical. Now, you know, I didn't know if that was anecdotal or if it actually worked. So what I did was, on the one that I left on the primary, I did shake it. I did rock it back and forth, but I didn't want to disturb the tube at the bottom too much. So I just rocked it kind of gently back and forth. Since I didn't have a third one that was completely undisturbed, I don't know if it had an impact over just letting it sit, but I do know that it didn't have as big of an impact as racking to secondary. So maybe more aggressive, you know, degassing, as you would do in some stages of winemaking. Maybe that does help settle things out. So we do know that that racking to the secondary fermenter helps settle the yeast out more quickly, but we have to talk about what impact that does in the sensory realm. So what I did was I bottled up two pairs of beers, one of the Belgian, one of the pale ale, and I took them to a brewing session that I attended with Steve Wilkes and Paul Morstad. Well, here we are in the Morstad household, and welcome to Basic Brewing Radio, Paul Morstad.
Hello, everyone.
Is this your first time on the show?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Yes. We only have one microphone and an inept microphone holder. And Steve Wilkes, how are you?
I'm well, James, thanks.
We're over here brewing a Märzen Oktoberfest beer, Paul's second all-grain beer, first lager, and first use of the mash tun. We did the brew-in-a-bag technique the first time. So what do you think of this all-grain stuff?
I'm enjoying it. I feel like kind of a bystander, but next time I think I'm ready to kind of dive in with it, you know, based on just watching these two being made.
Yeah, you're unfortunately brewing with two of the worst teachers, because we're control freaks. So we want to do everything ourselves.
It's great, actually, because, you know, you don't stop and do a pedagogical thing with me. So I just, like, get to watch what you're doing. And I pick up a lot that way, which is great, actually. Just, you know, seeing, yeah.
And now I'm putting you to work. So we're doing a little experiment here. You're doing a blind taste testing. We're doing two rounds. This first round is a Belgian. I've given you beer A and beer B, and I've asked you to compare and contrast the two. And Paul, you went first.
Yes, I found beer A to be slightly brighter, maybe a little edgier. I mean, in a good way, just crisper than beer B. And otherwise, pretty similar to me.
Steve?
I would agree with what Paul said. I felt like beer A had a stronger nose. The bouquet of the beer was brighter and more, a little more bready, a little more present. And I agree that beer B is a little softer, a little rounder. But you know what? If you're riding a horse and drinking this beer, you couldn't tell the difference between the two.
So, well, those Belgian equestrian drinking experiences.
It's been a while since I've done that. Actually, I've never done that. So,
So, what about clarity, appearance, all that?
They really appear to be exactly the same beer to me. I can't tell any difference between them.
I didn't really notice much difference either. Now, of course, I've finished my sample of A, so I can't really look. But when I first looked at them, I agree with Steve. I didn't see too much difference.
So preferences?
I think I'd liked beer A better, but only slightly so. You know, again, there's very little difference between the beers. But if I had to pick, I'd pick beer A.
I concur with Mr. Wilkes.
Okay, on to round two.
Ooh.
Okay, we're back with round two. Now, this is the beer that we actually brewed the other day. this hoppy pale ale, and I let go of my control freakiness for that one, and I let Paul. Actually, I threw it open to both of you guys to determine the hopping schedule, and you mm-hmm. deferred to Paul. So, what do you think of your hopping schedule?
I have to say, I'm pleased with the results. If you're a hop fan, you're going to like this one.
Yeah, it's really good. And you commented that it reminded you a lot of the Boulevard Single White IPA. Mm-hmm. And yes, it does.
I think it's spot on, yeah. Definitely.
Okay, so we got A and B in front of you. Steve, you go first this time.
And so my task is to compare and contrast. There's no difference between these two beers. I can't tell a lick of difference between the two of them.
Appearance, aroma, flavor, mouthfeel.
That's right. I truly cannot tell any difference between these two beers. So they appear to be the same color. The hop aroma seems the same. The malt aroma seems the same to me. Just check it off and put an A by both sides.
I'm going to mainly agree with Steve, but break just a little bit. For some reason, A just seems to have a little bit more pronounced hop thing going on for me. I don't know. That's just what I'm getting.
On what order of magnitude would you measure that?
Just slightly above B. It's very subtle. It's not much. It's just, you know, because, I mean, like I said, I basically agree with Steve. They're almost, you know, it'd be hard to tell them apart except for, you know, the way we're doing this. But for some reason, I'm just getting a little bit more from A. I don't know.
I'm going to retract just ever so slightly. No, really, no, just ever so slightly.
The focus group phenomenon.
Well, no, when Paul was talking, I was tasting again, and if I was going to draw a difference between the two, I think B is just a little tiny bit softer. That's it.
Barely.
I mean, barely.
Yeah.
Maybe that's because it's warmed a little bit, you know. I mean, because they do change as they get warmer and, you know, lose a little effervescence and all that, so. Mm. Maybe in 5 minutes I might have a different answer. Check back.
Yeah, maybe I'm just expecting them to be different. But it did seem like when I went to B after A that the hop characteristic was just slightly different. Yeah.
It'd be interesting. We didn't bring enough beers to do a triangle test, but it'd be interesting to do a test to see if you could pick out the odd sample.
I thought I was the odd sample.
Yeah, junior sample, yeah. Is the odd
sample. I use BR549 yeast in that.
Number to go.
Do you want to know the difference? Do you know which one's which?
I want to know the difference, and I also want to know when I can go to England.
I'm not a magic eight ball.
Yeah. Please tell us the difference.
Okay, on the first one, you guys liked A better? Was that right?
Yeah, I did, I think.
Yeah, I think he said that the A was brighter,
yeah.
B was softer.
Yeah.
A in the Belgian was the one that was only on the primary and was not racked to secondary.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
On the second batch, on the pale ale, you guys liked A again?
Mm-hmm.
That was a secondary. It was the one racked to the secondary.
Hmm.
And B was the one that was left on the primary.
Well, I can say this much. With the Belgian recipe, I could tell the difference much more. There was more of a difference between the two beers in the Belgian recipe.
Agreed.
With the pale ale recipe, I mean, we are really splitting hairs.
Yep. No question. That's exactly right. I would agree.
So as far as bottling goes, with the pale ale, there was very little difference, but you seem to prefer the one racked on to the secondary.
Yes.
With the Belgian, there was a sharper or more pronounced difference, and you pronounced the one that, or you preferred the one that was kept on the primary.
Yes.
I would hasten to add, it wasn't so much like one was better than the other, so much like a preference. It was just there were those differences, you know, the differences in the characteristics of the hop character on the ale and just the clarity of the flavor of the Belgian.
But the thing that got me was that there was no difference in the appearance of either pair.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't notice one.
No, I couldn't tell a difference in how they looked.
And there was a difference when I bottled. I mean, especially in the Belgian, the difference was striking. I mean, the one that was on the primary was way cloudy. The one that was in the secondary had cleared up. It was less striking in the pale ale, but the one that was in the primary was still more cloudy than the racked one. But in the bottle, things seem to have evened out.
I'm not sure what we've learned from this. Because, and I mean that sincerely, in that all four beers were good beers.
Yeah.
And I would say that we both agreed that the Belgian, was it the non-racked Belgian, we thought had just a little bit more flavors, a little bit more, and we preferred that. Yeah. So I think if I was going to draw any conclusion from this, that it would be recipe dependent.
Mm. Yeah, that's that. It's the old "it depends."
Well, yeah, I'll be wearing those soon.
It does complicate things a bit, but yeah, I you know, one would have to experiment for themselves, obviously, like, I mean, which is sort of homebrewing in a nutshell, but, you know.
There you go. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome, James.
Our pleasure.
So there we go. There was no essentially little or no difference in between the pear and the pale ale. There was a bit of a difference, but very similar, very slight. With the Belgian, with the guys preferring the one that was held in the primary for the whole time and not racked.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that got me was that there was no difference in appearance between the two. I mean, you would think that if a beer was put into the bottle that was more cloudy, it might pour more cloudy, or it might come out the other side more cloudy. But I guess, you know, it's essentially racking it. Instead of racking it to a secondary, it's racking it into a bottle.
Right.
And then it settles out.
Right. And if we, you know, we assume that what the haze is in the fermenter is yeast. So when you chill it down, that's just going to drop out.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have been, when I taste those beers tonight, I'll take a look and see if I see any difference in the amount of sediment in the bottles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, I remember when I started homebrewing, my bottles would have just like I said, very impatient, you know, to drink beer. And I would bottle them, and they would just have this tremendous amount of sediment in the bottom. And it wasn't actually until I started racking, because I use 1056 a lot, and I started racking to secondary and letting it clear a little bit and then bottling it, I was like, oh yeah, this is good because I don't have to waste the last like quarter of the bottle because, you know, you can't pour it out off that much sediment. Well, so.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I forgot to look at that. I have one pair left, but I sent you those beers. And the plan was to taste them today, but then you've actually got other things to do today. So you sampling those beers, but when you still have stuff on your agenda, maybe not such a good idea. We did have some submissions, some data submissions from brewers out there in the wide world who did this along with us. Mark Raker from Potomac, Maryland, or Potomac, I guess, Maryland, brewed a cream ale, an all-grain batch, and he separated it into two separate, it was 11-gallon batch, separated into two 6-gallon carboys. He said, the timing of my listening to the experiment podcast was very serendipitous, downloaded and listened to it the day prior to my planning to rack to secondary, and has been my general practice was going to rack both to secondaries, but then thought, why the heck not? So it was accidental that he participated in the experiment. So primary fermentation was 14 days, then racked to 1 to a 5-gallon carboy and left the second untouched. The second phase was 20 days before racking both to kegs where they aged for a bit. He said, the racked brew cleared rather quickly and passed my flashlight test. I shine a flashlight through the keg, and if I, or carboy, I bet he means, and if I can clearly and brightly see the filament, it's clear. The unracked brew never really cleared, remained hazy, and had some bubble carbonation on the carboy sides. Now, after he kegged, he had a tasting. He says his daughter Megan joined me for the taste comparison test. She just graduated from Syracuse, and her most educational class last semester was the beer and wine appreciation class. he says, now that I have an expert and legal drinker with me, we compared my cream ales for differences. I knew what was poured, but she was tasting blind. On the color, the secondary beer was slightly more golden in color, the primary only a bit paler. The head retention, same, not much difference. Or the same, not much head retention. Carbonation, the same. The taste, very, very close, though we both thought the secondary one was only a bit more accentuated and flavorful, while the primary was only a bit muffled. The difference was certainly less at kegging time a month ago. So he tasted them at kegging time a month ago. It was more of a difference, but then after a month of aging in the keg, it was much more close. And there were some friends of her her daughter came over who were, he says, they were not educated in the advanced college beer class. but they noted no perceptible difference between the two. So there was a, there you go, there's a slight preference for the racked beer from a cream ale. Now, the rest of these are hoppy pale ales. Gary Munch from Connecticut did a rye IPA with a Y-Yeast 1450, a four-gallon all-grain batch. I put the entire batch into one fermenter and let it sit for 2 weeks. Then I racked half of it into a secondary fermenter, let both fermenters sit for an additional 2 weeks. The recipe also included dry hopping, so for one additional week, I added half the dry hops to each of the fermenters. After five total weeks, I bottled two bottles from each fermenter and added one Cooper's carbonation drop into each bottle. The rest of both batches were racked into a keg. In the fermenters, it seemed that the beer in the secondary fermenter was definitely clearer. Visually, both beers were surprisingly similar in clarity. This is coming out of those bottles. I don't think there was a difference, but if pressed, I would actually say the primary beer actually appeared slightly clearer. Color was the same for both. Carbonation head retention, however, were dramatically different. The primary-only beer had carbonated much better, and it had better head retention. All results were checked with both pairs of bottles. No differences in aroma. The primary beer had more hop flavor up front and finished smoother. The secondary beer did seem a bit brighter but had less hop flavors up front and also had a sharper hop bitterness in the finish. My wife and I preferred the primary-only beer. And Gary says, based on my limited results, I see no reason to rack to secondary, even if adding dry hops. I think that as long as you dry hop after the initial fermentation is done, you won't lose any hop aroma or flavor, just dry hopping in the primary. There was certainly no loss in clarity from doing primary only. Which, that's the again, the thing that surprised me. If you bottle just from the primary, it doesn't seem to hurt the clarity.
Yeah, the you know, thing that's making the beer cloudy in either primary or secondary is yeast. So if you bottle your beer and you know, store it cold, the yeast is going to drop out. So it's, yeah, it shouldn't be an issue of clarity in the finished beer, but in clarity in the beer, you know, going to the keg, which, you know, may or may not have consequences.
Brian Davis and Justine Jaspers from Lisle, Minnesota did a rye IPA. 10-gallon all-grain batch, dry yeast. It says, the brewing took place before, during, and after a meeting of the IMNSOB, the Iowa-Minnesota Society of Brewers. We've since decided that it's a bad idea to brew on meeting days. In spite of less than optimum processes, the beer turned out pretty darn good. Racked from the kettle, alternating about every 2 gallons into 6.5-gallon carboys, 10 days in the primary, then 11 more in the secondary. Nothing remarkable different in the fermentation process, it says. No difference in the head volume, color, and clarity. In a triangle test, we were able to detect a slight difference in the aroma, but couldn't really decide which one we liked better. The hop seemed a little more forward in the primary only, while the secondary seemed to let the malt through a little more. Found the odd one in the triangle test, but then disagreed again which one tasted better. They say it's really splitting hairs. If they weren't side by side, no one would think they were from the same fermenter. So Brian and Justine say pretty much confirms what we already believed. It's not necessary to transfer to a secondary. You can if you want to, but doesn't seem to make a big difference. Rich Estill from Lansing, Michigan, did an IPA, an all-grain 10-gallon batch, split evenly between two carboys. The first carboy was in primary for 10 days, then secondary for 20 days. The second carboy was in the primary for 30 days. At 30 days, they were transferred into kegs. The main difference I noticed was a carboy that was transferred to secondary clarified much more quickly than the carboy that was not transferred to secondary. After another week, they were both clear. Visually, I can't tell any difference looking at two glasses after the finished beer comes out of the taps. Aroma, I cannot detect any difference. When I asked my wife, who does not like beer, she said they both smell equally bad. Tasting, I cannot taste any difference between the two beers. The main difference was very apparent to me was the amount of time it took to clarify. The beer in the secondary clarified much faster than the beer left in the primary for an extended period, but when it was time to keg, they both looked the same. So in that instance, a little patience was all that was needed. And then Mike Dupong from Twin Falls, Idaho, he and Tracy Emery of Jerome, Idaho, brewed 5.5 gallons of Jameel's Evil Twin, a hop-bursted red ale fermented with non-rehydrated USO5 at 68 degrees for 1 week in a 6.5-gallon glass carboy. Half was then racked into a 5-gallon glass carboy, and both halves bottled 5 weeks later. This tasting occurred 4 weeks after bottling. We both agreed that the non-racked version was fuller in body and had more of an intense malty aroma and flavor. The malts really came through with wonderful notes of prune and raisin while retaining a good hop profile. The racked version leaned more towards a thinner, less bodied, more astringent, hoppier beer that seemed a bit out of balance. The racked version appeared to have a slightly darker appearance. For this style, we've concluded that the beer that remained in the primary was superior to the racked version. So there you go. The people who... In most cases, the difference was not significant, but in the cases where it was significant enough to prefer, two preferred the primary and one preferred the secondary. So so what do we take from this?
I think the big result here is that racking your beer to secondary does get it to clear, but the difference in the finished beer might not be that great. There may be reasons that you would want the beer to clear in secondary, especially if you're racking it to a keg and you don't want, to pump out a couple pints of yeast slurry at first. But from the standpoint of quality, it might not have a big effect, or it might be the sort of thing where you would have to, on a beer-by-beer basis, sort of check and see if, because some people did report a beer or did report that they could taste differences. And, it might be that you can taste a difference on hoppy beers, but not, more malt-forward beers. It may be that at higher alcohol levels or lower alcohol levels, it's more or less detectable. That's just something that, you would have to know. But I would think that the big result here is that if you want your beer to clear more quickly, rack it to secondary.
Yeah.
If you don't have the time to do it, or you don't want to, and your bottle of conditioning your beer or kegging, the clarity is going to get there just from cooling the beer down and crashing out the yeast. it's just it seems to me it's just how you want to handle your yeast. Where do you want your yeast crashing out? Do you want them in the bottom of your secondary fermenter, or do you want them in the bottle of your bottles or keg?
Yeah, I think I would like to see a comparison between racking to secondary and just taking the primary fermenter and sticking it in the refrigerator and cold crashing the primary, and just see if there's, you know, compare the performance between those two approaches. Not everybody has a refrigerator to cold crash a beer, but it would be interesting to see how those two approaches compare.
Right.
Yeah, I think if I was going to make a recommendation from this, it would be, or let's just say this is how it's going to affect my brewing practice. I think if I'm bottling, I'm not going to worry about it. I'm not going to rack to secondary. I'm just going to keep the beer in the primary for, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, depending on the style of beer and the variety of yeast. But if I'm bottling, I'm not going to rack to secondary. However, if I have a yeast that is stubborn and does not want to flocculate out, and I'm kegging, I'm definitely going to rack to secondary. And in fact, whenever I brew a Belgian now, I'm just going to do that as a matter of course. Say after fermentation is complete, a week, week and a half after pitching, I'm just going to rack to secondary and then let it clarify and then keg it. So I think that's, you know, to me, I think that's the fairly clear-cut advice.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable. That's probably what I'll do, because I like, when I keg beer, I like the beer to be clear in the keg, because I don't like there to be a big, yeast sediment at the bottom, even though, you know, you blow it out in the first couple right around the tube, but I just prefer clear beer in my kegs, so I'll probably go with secondary when if the beer doesn't clarify in primary.
Very good. I like this. This is a fairly – in a lot of our experiments, we get a it depends, you know, moment. But I think that this is one of the ones that we can, you know, be fairly confident in the results and fairly clear in our recommendations as a result from it. So
yeah, very clear result here. Racking to secondary does clear your beer.
There you go. Well, thanks to everybody who participated. This was a fun one. And of course, it's up to us now, Chris, to come up with the next one. But we'll have to do that after our summer break. We're going to take a break for the next few weeks from posting on Basic Brewing Radio. So maybe by the time we get back, we'll have another challenge for our listeners to take up. Well, Chris, I appreciate it. Have a good summer,
and we'll you too.
We'll talk.
I'll see you in the fall
or late summer.
Or late summer.
Thanks, Chris.
Talk to you later, James.
Very interesting results. Thanks again to everybody who participated in the experiment. I hope that you got as much out of it as I did, and be sure to look on our Facebook page and on the in the description of this episode on basicbrewingradio.com for links to photographs that I put together showing the progression of the fermentation of the Belgian. Pretty dramatic. Also, thanks to Steve and Paul for the use of their palettes. And as usual, thanks to Chris Colby for his time and expertise. If you want a free issue of Brew Your Own magazine, you can click on the banner on our site. And if you decide to subscribe after reading that issue, you'll be helping to support this show. And I appreciate greatly all of those who have done so already. Remember, we're off for the next few weeks. We'll talk to you again when we get back from Seattle. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com, or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site, along with our Brewer's Logbook, which is available to order. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. You can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there as well. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are The Search for the Perfect Pub, Looking for the Moon Underwater, and Poop Bags, Waste Pickup Poop Dispenser with 15 biodegradable bags. You knew I was going to read that, didn't you? When you clicked on that link, you said, James is probably going to read this. Well, there you go. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site. The next time you want to go to Amazon and shop around, we'll get a little piece of that. We definitely appreciate your support. Also, don't forget, you can join the American Homebrewers Association in addition to subscribing to Brew Your Own magazine through associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until later, a few weeks from now. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.